Drunk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Good morning. I am Art Bell, and I've got Kate on the line, who worked on several missile systems, China Lake and elsewhere. Met a guy who was at Roswell and also was a geneticist. That's a kind of a fiery combination. We'll be right back. A lot of people want to know any more information you might have at all, Kate. I mean, here's a guy, a geneticist. He was at Roswell, and now he's not happy doing the work he's doing, whatever it is, at China Lake. Any more hints you can give us about...
Oh, definitely, Art. And I do apologize that this is such a lengthy story.
That's
There's
okay. Go right ahead.
A lot I'm leaving out, but just the gist of it is that was the last time I saw him, but during the conversation... on my lunch hour, I let him know that I knew his name was not Roger. And I said, I know you feel that we're being watched, so why don't you just blink your eyes once for yes, twice for no. So the conversation was, you were at Roswell. He blinked once for yes. I said, the stories that we have heard over the 40-some-odd years, 50-some-odd years, are they all true? He blinked twice for no. I said, was there a crash of a UFO? He blinked once. The gist of it was that a little less than a fourth of the information that's out there is correct. He said the rest of it is not correct.
Even a fourth ain't bad.
Even a fourth ain't bad. And so I was being a smart person. I won't say that on the air. But I said, did this creature like strawberry milkshakes, like we all heard about. And his face softened as though he was remembering a memory that actually made him happy. And he blinked once. Oh. And my zinger, we all have our intuition. Well, I call mine my zinger, and my zinger went off. And I knew this man was there. I knew he was telling the truth, and I knew this man was scared. I never saw him again after that day. To get the story going, during this next 6 months, various animals were found out in Inyokern, which is west of China Lake, by about 8 miles.
Yes.
Being the animal lover I am, it really bothered me when I heard some of these stories. The first one was a rabbit, and this is pertinent to what I believe Roger was doing on the base.
Sure.
So some children, an 8-year-old, 9-year-old, and 11-year-old, they're all brothers, were out riding their bikes in Inyokern where they lived, and they heard this horrible screaming sound, thought it was a cat. Well, they followed the sound and found a domestic rabbit, not a cottontail or a jackrabbit like you find out in the desert, but a domesticated rabbit, and it had a partial head growing out of the back of its neck. The mouth was clearly visible. It had one eye, and the rest of it, you could tell that it was like something trying to come out, like a Harry Potter movie, trying to come out of the back of its head. And it upset the boys so bad that one of the boys rode back, got his father. His father brought out a handgun, and once he saw it, he shot it, thinking it was just some environmental... mishap.
Yes.
Well, the kids didn't want to leave the rabbit, so they buried it. And the next day, they went back to put flowers on its grave and to say a small prayer because their father was in such a hurry to get him away from it that they found the carcass missing. It had been dug up by an animal. Great. Well, another cat was found, and this cat was fine. There was nothing wrong with it. It was not upset, hurt, or anything, but it had two tails.
Two tails. Roger's work.
Could be. Could very well be.
How many animals like that?
My story is 18. I'm sure there's more than that. I'm
18
sure there's
animals in the area.
The biggest one was some college kids driving north on 395 heading towards Mammoth for a camping trip. They hit a dog. The dog, they stopped, got out of the car. They said the dog had a leg growing out of its left flank and a leg growing out of its right flank. They said that the leg was half the length of the dog's legs. They said the dog was a lab mix, a small lab mix. They thought it was dead. They walked back to the car. It was in the headlights, walked back to the car to get a blanket because they just did not want to leave it at the side of the road. And on the way back with the blanket, it got up and looked at them and then ran off down into the desert, into the night. And they couldn't find it. They said they looked and looked and looked, but they never saw it.
Oh, brother.
So anyway, there were animals like this. Well, in the summer, I had a friend who was a police officer, and he called one night, and he said, "You're not working on Friday night. Why don't you do a ride-along?" And I'm like, "Hey, great, no problem." Ridgecrest is not really, you know, a big spot for a lot of excitement, so I thought, you know, what the heck.
Sure.
So we were having dinner, and we got a call, and some woman out in Inyokern, once again out in Inyokern, called and had complained about a week straight, saying that there was a bear going through her trash can. Mm-hmm. And she called, and nobody paid any attention. She said, "I want somebody out here now." So they called my friend, and we went out there, and he told me, "You stay in the car." I'm like, "Yeah, right, sure." So I got out of the car with him. We walked around. She was out in Inyokern. There's mobile homes. There's not any houses, just to set the picture. There were three rows of mobile homes that went down about a mile. They're each on about an acre. And down at the very end of one of these little dirt roads was a big dumpster. And this woman was standing on the porch of her mobile home. Her dogs were in the front yard barking at this creature. And we went around. We heard this grunting noise. Go around the corner of the fence where the bush is, and we see what we thought was a bear. But there are no bears in the desert. But when it turned around, I could not believe my eyes. And my friend Daryl just about, I just...
Try me. Give me the best description.
It was about 7 feet tall. Daryl was about, he's been deceased for a while, but he was 6'3". So I know... This thing had to have been about 7 feet. It was upright like a man. It had greenish-brown fur all over it. It wasn't ape-like. It was definitely a male. And I don't think I need to tell you how I knew that, but it smelled terrible of blood, urine, feces. It was terrible. But it made no apparent action towards us. It was like, oh, you know, audience. Went back to dumpster diving. He pulled out a sack of Carl's Jr. hamburger stuff and was eating. He didn't care that we were standing there.
Yes.
And the woman was standing there screaming at us, "Get that thing out of my garbage can."
I'm sure.
And
so what'd you do?
So anyway, I just yelled at it. I said, "Hey!" I mean, when it looked at me, I swear, it looked like it had human eyes. They didn't glow red like an animal. It was acting kind of like a human that had been out in the forest for all of its life. And it didn't try to come at us. It didn't scream at us. It just grunted and was looking for food. It was just foraging. That's all it was doing.
Then what? It just left?
It just, the woman shot her shotgun up in the air because she didn't want it out there anymore, and the dogs were barking, and it just lumbered off. It didn't run screaming off into the night.
So the bottom line to this story, Kate, is you believe that Roger and his friends at China Lake were conducting some kind of post-Roswell genetic research, and all these weird things were showing up in the desert. I really appreciate your story.
Yes. May I finish off?
Yes.
Okay. I never saw Roger again. That was in 1977. I ran across Roger in 1992 in San Diego. I was down visiting relatives and at a supermarket, and I saw him shopping in a supermarket. Again, I called out Roger. He didn't turn around, so I went and tapped him on the shoulder, and he said, "Oh, my God, you cannot be seen talking to me." He said, "Kate, I'm supposed to be dead. You've got to get away from me." And I was just kind of stunned, and it's very hard to stun me, and I didn't say much, and he turned around and walked away. In the year 2003, I hadn't seen or heard about Roger. I mean, it's not like we exchanged Christmas cards.
Yeah.
I received a phone call, I believe it was in August of 2003, from one of his friends. He said he was a friend of Roger's, and that Roger had somewhat retired to his place in Connecticut, or close to there.
Okay, we're short on time now.
Roger was murdered. He told me Roger was murdered, had been executed kind of like mafia style in his front living room. He didn't show up for his fishing trip in the morning, and so his friend went to look for him, and they found him. He found him murdered. And it never hit the papers. He said that what he called was a sweeper team. Black vehicles showed up and removed his body, and nobody ever heard anything. There was no obituary or anything. And his friend said he was leaving the country because he was fearing for his life.
And you swear all of this is true, Kate?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you very, very much. You have a good night. That's Kate. All of this material is coming from average people, people like you and me, just people. That's some story. I don't know. I tend to sort of buy what she said. I think because of the way she told it. I don't know. That's up to you. What do you think? Guess what? Here's the doctor who supplied the video that's on the front page of the Coast to Coast AM site that I talked about at the beginning of the program of The Triangle. Doctor, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Your name is Dr. Mark Olson, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Of Sonora?
Of Sonora, California, yes.
All right. So the night that I was doing the program with ABC Network all around me here, talking about triangles on the air, black triangles, you taped this?
Yes, sir, I did. It was very interesting.
I recognize your laugh from the tape.
I was laughing because you guys were talking about black triangles, and there was one right in front of me.
I mean, you really caught this sucker dead on, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
Is there anything that you saw? I mean, the tape is self-evident.
Mm-hmm.
It's just self-evident. But is there anything that you saw? Boy, that is so convincing. Can you give us an idea of how far away this thing was from you?
I'd say maybe a mile, if that. It was. It just came right over the mountain. The first thing it did was it came from behind the mountain and then went back down behind it again. Then it popped back up, and by that time I was ready with the camcorder going, "What is that?" And as I videotaped this thing, it went straight up and then went right over my head.
It's got three distinct white lights. Were they light? White, rather?
They weren't really white. There were two green ones and one red one. And as it came over my house, it was going very, very slowly.
That sounds just like what we saw. And very slowly.
Very slowly.
And so what? You ran inside and grabbed a video recorder? Or how did camcorder, what happened?
Well, actually, we've had so many different sightings of aerial phenomena here. I had the camera ready. And the first thing I saw was a shooting star. It was beautiful. It went over towards the mountain. And as I followed it with my eyes, then I saw the object bob up from behind the mountain and then bob back down.
Do you know 99 and 9/10 of the people that ever get to see something like this never have the presence of mind to have a video camcorder nearby? I'm one of them. I mean, it's just not something you do, you know, haul around a camcorder for a once-in-a-lifetime shot of a UFO. God, I wish I'd had one when I saw mine, but of course I did not. You did. Congratulations.
Thank you, sir. I've had that camera glued to my hand ever since May 2004 because we've had so many sightings here.
Well, you sure nailed a big one. No question about that. And you just, emailed that video in today, is that correct, or yesterday?
A few days ago, yes, I did.
A few days ago. All right. Well, anything else other than what we... Was there any sound or totally silent?
It was very, very quiet. There was no sound whatsoever. And it flew so slowly that if it was any conventional aircraft, it would have been falling out of the sky.
Just the way I described it. All right. Listen, thank you. Thank you for coming on the air. And congratulations on doing something that 99 and 9/10 of us can't do.
Thank you, Art. I appreciate it. I've been a long-time listener.
Take care. Take care, my friend. All right. There you have it. Now, you go see this video. This is worth seeing. This is one of those, we got some proof here. Look at it. See what you think. I do say it's mighty coincidental that that all of this occurred on the very night that ABC was here. On my Let's Make a Deal line, you're on the air.
Let's make a deal.
Yeah, let's make a deal. That's right. I was asking for people, holding a line open, for people who had made a deal with the devil.
Yes, sir.
That's you.
Yes, sir.
You made a deal with the devil.
I did.
When did you do this?
It was approximately 10 years ago.
10 years ago.
Yeah.
And you were how old?
I was 24. Wait, 20. Well, I guess it was more than 10 years. I was about 26 years old.
26 years old. And what was your condition that you were ready to make a deal?
Well, it's really stupid. I was sort of madly in love with a girl, and I was going to be, and you know, when the relationship's bad, you tend to become desperate. And I needed not to be transferred across the country, and I needed something to happen. And I didn't know what to do, and so I was just sort of kind of like asking out loud.
Were you in the military or something? You say transferred across country. What, were you working for a company?
I was working for a company, yes, sir.
All right.
So I asked to, I just kind of asked out loud for somebody to help me with this situation.
Yes.
Nobody in general. I don't know why I was talking like that, but, a voice came to me and said that it could help me.
Huh.
I don't normally hear voices in my head, and so I said, who is this? I thought I was crazy, and the voice told me that it was Satan.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, that should have been an alert right there. Satan. But nevertheless, curious, I suppose.
Well, yeah, it was curiosity, and...
somebody says, something says, I'm Satan. And, I mean, it's hard to imagine what you responded to that. I mean, what did you respond? I'm Satan. And you said...
I said, well, I don't want anything to do with you.
Oh.
And he says, but I can help you. Well, yeah, but, you know, what do you want?
Huh. That's the right question.
He says, nothing.
I don't know if that's the right answer.
Well, that's what he lied to me.
So nothing.
Nothing. And I said, nothing? He says, yeah, I'll help you for free.
Sounds like some emails I've had, but go ahead.
So I denied it first, and the voice kind of persisted, and I denied again. And then I said, well, you know, fine. If it's free, it's free. Go ahead. Do what you're going to do. And that was the deal.
And the deal was, I mean, the help was you will not be transferred. You get a chance to stay with your girl?
Yeah, I lose the job.
Oh.
Right? And it wasn't quite the deal I wanted. I didn't actually make a formal deal. It was just for general help.
Uh-huh.
And so I lost the job.
Okay. Since you've made this deal with Lucifer... How's it going?
Well,
Hold that till we get back. I do want to find out how it's gone. Remember, we've got a line open for those who have made a deal.
Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
You know, the words to this song kind of remind me of how the devil would probably view his constituency. You know, so many of you out there. I'm sure that's exactly the way the
devil thinks about it.
So, how did your deal with the devil go? I mean, how's it gone since?
Well, it things went pretty good for a while. I started getting different. It went kind of slow at first, but as time went on, I started getting introduced to people, and I was eventually introduced to a witch, who became my master, and trained me, and I became quite accomplished and different advents of the occult.
Has this become a successful life for you?
No, because I eventually became possessed by demons and lost control of myself.
Oh. Well, when you make a deal.
Oh, well, no. Luckily, I listened to your show, and I heard Father Malachi Martin speaking.
Yes.
And as he spoke, I listened to his words, and I realized that he was right. That I had made a deal with the devil the way he had said, and that was when I decided that I would do something. And after listening to him for 3 years, I looked for somebody to perform an exorcism, and I eventually found someone in the Eastern Orthodox Church, and they were able to free me from his grasp.
They took the devil out of you.
Many devils.
By then you were like an old computer that didn't even know viruses existed. And there were devils all over you.
That's a good way of putting it.
Uh-huh. And so your whole operating system got rebooted. I see. See, I don't know if that's how it goes, though. I'm not sure that once you make a deal with the devil or Lucifer, that there's really any reboot available. West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes, hi, sir.
I'll give you a little background before I start my story.
So, what is your first name?
My first name is Bill.
Bill. Okay, Bill.
Yes, I'm a retired New York City fire captain. I retired in 97. The incident I'm going to describe happened in May of 1989.
So you got out before 9/11. That's
yes,
good.
And I was a structural firefighter, you know, retired right from the line.
Brother,
so you had to be sound mind and sound body.
I hear you.
So I just want to, I bring that point out. So this is not someone who's hallucinating or going for shock therapy.
Yes, sir. Gotcha.
So what happened, Bob, Art, was my brother, who was a firefighter too, we both, our vacation sort of overlapped, and I said I would, if I could, I would meet him down in West Virginia at his trailer. And what happened was, there's a psychological component to this. At the time, I was reading Whitney Strieber's book, Communion, Above Top Secret by Timothy Good.
So you were, you had a sort of a mindset then.
Yes, and mm-hmm. I think when I say a psychological component, I think there's the phenomenon attaches itself to you, believe it or not. I mean, there's something strange.
Oh, no, I believe it. People who put themselves in these mindsets tend to have experiences like you're about to describe. Believe me, it's true. So,
but, yes, it's not hallucination.
Yes.
So what happened, I meet him, first of all, what was strange was, I had a compulsion to go this one night. I said I had to go down there, and I asked my wife to come with me. It was raining out in a storm. She says, "You're a crazy driver. I'm not going to go with you at night. You want to wait till morning? I'll go with you." So I said, "Well, I was under compulsion to go." So I just left, and she says, "Don't get beamed up, Scotty. You know." So I meet my brother down there, and after being there a couple of days, and he's with his wife, he says, at that time, in that time frame, there was a collapse of a radio telescope, 300-foot in diameter, down in Greenbank, West Virginia. And it was in the papers at the time. And
that's a big radio telescope, 300 feet in diameter.
Yes. And he says, let's go down to Greenbank and take a look at it. So we get down there, and we started heading off into the woods, having no idea, and have many antennas down there. They're like 6, 7, 8, 10 stories high, some of these things.
Yes, sir.
And we're cutting through the woods, and I got this big Panasonic camcorder. At that time, it was 7.5 pounds. It had like an electronic image stabilizer system, and it's about 2 feet long, not like the camcorders they have today. And I'm shooting snakes as we're going, and we come out into this opening, and there's a pile of debris of steel I-beams, like two stories high, roped off with yellow tape, warning to stay away. And it's a one-story structure where some of the beams came down. And these are steel girders that collapsed. When they fractured, it was like a flow.
You were at the site of the collapsed telescope?
Yes, we went beyond the tape where you weren't supposed to go, and we went in underneath the debris.
Yes, sir.
And we're looking at this. This antenna was on two posts. It had these. In other words, this antenna could only go north and south, and it took the rotation of the Earth from west to east.
Right.
That was the only way it could move.
Right. And on the night of the collapse, there was no storm. There was
that was reported in the paper, was on a calm, windless night. So we look at one of the things, and you could see, this was no dismantling of the antenna at the time. And you're looking down at these big bolts, and you could see where each one was cut, where you could see where it started on the bolt and cut the nuts with like a laser beam. Every one was cut, like sabotage, you know?
Yes.
And I, at a later date, I had talked to a woman where these radio astronomers eat in a luncheonette. I went in there, and I asked, was there anyone working the night of that collapse? And they brought out this elderly woman from the rear. And she says, I was. I said, can you tell me what went on that night?
Uh-huh.
She told me the man's name. I won't mention it on the air because I don't know if it would.
Probably better not to. That's
fine. I guess I won't because I'm afraid that would cause some kind of problem. Yet.
That's fine.
And she said he came up, and he mentioned there's something going on down at the antenna. She said he was like in a panic, and she wouldn't further elaborate. I went into this. This was after the incident I'm going to tell you about. I went to the administrative building, and I had learned at that date that antenna was going to be hooked up with radio telescopes all around the world. And when they had made the connections, it was going to effectively, you would have a telescope twice the diameter of the Earth. So what happened was, looking back on it now, I think it was taken out by the extraterrestrials for whatever reason this was going to be used. I had spoken to one of the radio telescope astronomers, and he says that they also used it at that time to track Russian submarines. It had a dual purpose for these antennas.
It is true that you can you can put telescopes together and obtain, you know, a much larger than life picture by magnitudes as you hook them up. That's true. So you think something stepped in and you saw the proof. You saw something like a laser beam that cut through these steel beams.
Well, no, I didn't see. You see what
no, I understand. You didn't see it happen, but I didn't see it happen.
Yes.
Yeah, you saw the results of it, though.
Of it, yes.
I take it you had a camcorder with you, so you filmed some of that.
Yes,
right?
I did. I camcorded too.
What have you done with that film?
I still have that, but you know, I have never been able to find. Part of the incident where I saw a UFOs. The next day, see, when we're heading back to New York City. We're in the Canaan Valley in West Virginia, and that's a 10-hour trip. And because of our encounters, we didn't get into the next morning at 4:30 in the morning. We could not account for all our time. Yet, from the excitement of the ensuing encounters we had with UFO, we had multiple encounters. It was printed in the MUFON UFO Journal of 1990. Dr. McAfee did an analysis on the video.
Oh, he did?
Yes, along with other videos from Florida, a Gulf breeze.
Okay, you had missing time?
Yes, I wasn't even conscious of missing time because I never felt so alive and excited from what I witnessed. You know, realizing that we're not alone in this universe.
And so you think, on the one hand, you saw what you wanted to see. You wanted something like this to happen. But you maintain that it was very real, nevertheless.
Yes. In other words, I had always wished I would see a UFO, never realized it. And this was on a cloud. This was on the day there wasn't a cloud in the sky. So the next day, it's 9:30 in the morning. We're heading back. You know, well, we joked around about aliens cutting this thing down, half believing, half joking, you know. So when we're heading back to New York City, my brother and his wife were in one car. We had a CB hookup between us. We're 5 miles outside of the town of Parsons in West Virginia on Route 19, heading north, going back to New York, Long Island.
Yes.
And as we're making a turn, they had the oldest tree in West Virginia was on the right. As we make a right angle turn, and there's a range of mountains right ahead. We're almost like on a 45-degree angle going up. When my brother saw something come down and hover over the mountain, he brings it to my attention. He says, "You see that?" He says, "It doesn't look like a helicopter, and it doesn't look like a plane. Let's pull the car over and take a look." So as I'm looking at this thing from arm's length, it looked like the size of a pea. It was brown, and it seemed to be emitting something into atmosphere, brownish, like it was spraying something, three times the length of his body. While I'm getting a fix on it, before I get out of the car, this thing disappears. So I doubted my senses. I get out of the car, and my brother brings to my attention. He says, "Look at that contrail above us, like a J. It's a vertical, like a J contrail." I said, "Well, whatever that was, it went up into the stratosphere, you know?" So I look over his shoulder, and what's coming down out of the sky is bigger than the moon. It's this cold. It was a UFO coming down and clouds swirling on the circumference of it like in a storm. And it was so dramatic, it had this, that if you place Jesus in it, in that luminescent disc, it would look, it was...
That kind of dramatic.
It was stunning to see it visually, you know?
Yes, sir.
And I could tell it was spinning from the turning of the clouds like a storm right around it. And I think I was looking at the underside of it, because all of a sudden this thing appeared over trees. It was a silver, it looked like a beehive, like convoluted, like, you know, undulating.
Okay, we're kind of short on time here, so...
Okay, and so he, my brother had binoculars. He said he's on leading windows on the side. What happened is we continue on our trip. We're going into Maryland, 19. I look to my right. I see this little P-shaped thing coming again, and all of a sudden it increased to the size of a golf ball, and I noticed it didn't have a 3D look to it. And if you draw a circle like 5 feet in diameter, it was shimmering. So I said to myself, this is like a projected image, a manipulated image. So I get out of the car, I have the camcorder, I turn to my left, and I'm looking at a UFO across the road the size of a VW. It was a metallic brown. I could see dark windows on it, and I couldn't tell if it was spinning.
Pretty close up. So you got this on film?
No, I didn't catch. What happened is, when I'm looking at this object, I said the first reaction I had is, why would this thing kill me? You know, because I knew I was looking something from another universe, you know? It was just like an instinctive thought, but then I felt like a connection with it, you know, not threatened or anything.
Okay, we're going to have to go, so anything else you want to add?
Another one, after that disappeared like a luminescent disc, then as I grabbed the camera again to record it, as I got in the car, a gray one was there, and right across the road, like 3 feet, it was hovering 2 feet off the road, and you know, from then on, back to New York City, we didn't have a further incidents, but later on in the year, I had helicopters hovering over the house.
Yes, sir. Well, okay, but the film you got, the video you got, was examined by Bruce McAbee, you said?
Oh, that's correct. Yes, sir. And, Bruce McAbee.
And he verified the authenticity of what you did
get? Yes, he said it was not a hoax, that it was an aerial phenomenon. He can't identify it as extraterrestrial in origin.
But aerial phenomena of an unknown origin. All right, good enough. Well, that's the kind of thing that's going to be covered with those kind of witnesses. I mean, that man is now a retired fireman, so there you have it. It's the kind of thing going to be covered by ABC in the coming special on the 24th. So many stories like that. You're on the air, Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
This is Gene from Glorite, Arizona.
Yes, Gene.
Pleasure to talk to you again.
And to you. What's up?
Well, I sent you an email and had some stories I wanted to share with you, and I don't tell very many people these stories because I just freak people out when I tell them.
Try me.
Well, this all started, I'm a fireman, I'm retired. I'm also a sound mind, believe me.
Another fireman, all right.
Another fireman. And back in my rookie career, I'd worked an accident where we had to transport a guy about 40 miles to the closest hospital. And he'd been in a single car rollover, and he had coded on us. So I did CPR on him for 40 minutes in the back of the ambulance.
Oh.
Got him into the hospital, and I was exhausted. I mean, it just...
Yeah, I was about to say, 40 minutes of CPR is exhausting.
It is. It's a rough deal. So the hospital crew's working him, and I'm leaned up against the wall in the ER, and I kind of saw somebody out of the corner of my eye. I looked, and there's a guy standing next to me, and he goes, I wish they'd just leave me alone.
What?
And I said, excuse me? I said, I just wish they would just let me go.
Oh, my God.
And the doctor that was working, he looked at me, and you can just tell he saw the same thing. And that's when he called the code. He says, that's it. We can't do any more. And I was freaked out. There was a physician assistant there.
Did the two of you discuss this? How could you not?
Yes, we did. And I am just spooked. I'm, like, ready just to hit the ceiling. I didn't know what to think. Because the guy was wearing the same clothes...
What was it? Let me ask this. The man that you saw, was that the man you worked on?
Yeah. Yeah, it was him.
Did he look in any way less than fully visibly human? Was there anything ghostly about him?
No, not at all. No. He looked just like anybody else, and the clue was he was a big guy. He was over 6 feet, very obese. The clothes, he was wearing a Hawaiian shirt and white pants and sandals. And, I mean, I put two and two together, and, you know, I went, but Doc and I went up to the cafeteria. This was, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, and he told me he sees people all the time, too.
My God, if that happened to me, I'd be the one needing CPR.
Absolutely. And I was so freaked out, I left there, and I didn't even bother cleaning myself up. I'm still covered with this guy's, you know, blood. And I wasn't living at home. I had an apartment. I went to my mom and dad's house because I was so freaked out. And 3 o'clock in the morning, they answered the door. I'm covered with blood. They think I'm in an accident.
Sure.
And I was up all night. I couldn't sleep for days. And I went back and talked to the same doctor again. He said he started seeing people in his residency.
Oh, really?
Yes. And
I wonder how many healthcare professionals have had this experience.
There are quite a few, and it's kind of a taboo thing, believe me, because this happened over and over and over to me for over 23 years, and it got to be where I could tell where somebody was going to make it and they weren't because they didn't go with us.
Because they didn't go with you?
Yeah, we'd go into a house, start CPR, work on somebody. I'd see them sitting over there in a chair or hovering around us, you know, standing around, and never see them again, so I'm sure they're not going to go with us. They were separated, and they're not back in their body.
Were there ever any people that you saw that went back and
yes.
then ended up? Yes?
Yes. Yes. And those were the ones I knew that were going to make it, you know, because they would wind up in the ambulance with us. I'd see them at the emergency room.
Oh, my God. So you see dead people?
I've seen dead people, and it didn't happen all the time, but it happened so much, Art, that it was the norm for me. In fact, I was on an accident that involved some teenagers.
Listen, we're coming up on a break here, so can you hold on?
Sure.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, he sees dead people. All right. He talks with them. Oh, now that one, that's for the books. All right. Any other healthcare professionals out there? Any of you get to see the people you've been working on from the high desert in the nighttime? I'm Art Bell, and this, of course, is Coast to Coast AM. Nothing else like it in the world.